In a stunning move today, the Supreme Court stepped out of the gay marriage debate, at least for now. The justices refused to review lower court decisions that struck down state bans on same-sex marriage. That decision to not decide will nonetheless have an immediate and dramatic effect, soon bringing to 30 the number of states where gay marriage is legal. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports.
Without saying or writing a word, the justices let stand three appeals court decisions covering parts of the South, Midwest, and West. That means that same-sex couples will now be able to marry in 11 more states, including Utah, Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado, Wyoming, North and South Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, Indiana, and Wisconsin. Add those 11 states to the 19 states that already allow gay marriage, and you have 30 states where such unions are legal. Thousands more same-sex couples are expected to begin marrying immediately. In Virginia, for instance, the state began issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples earlier this afternoon. Of course, some appeals court could, this year or next, uphold a same-sex marriage ban. Were that to happen, the Supreme Court would likely have to resolve the conflicting decisions. But by then, there likely will be tens of thousands more same-sex couples married in states that had outlawed the practice. And it's hard to imagine the justices then telling those couples that they're not married after all. Gay marriage opponents were largely silent today, but conceded privately that there would be chaos if the High Court later decides to backtrack. Amy Howe is editor of SCOTUS Blog, the leading Supreme Court blog.
The Supreme Court justices are very smart people, and I don't think they're going to be able to put the genie back in the bottle.
Howe says that the message to the lower courts may be grudging, but it's pretty clear.
Keep on doing what you're doing. We may not be ready to proclaim a national constitutional right to same-sex marriage, but we're not going to stop you from doing it on a state-by-state basis.
Some in the gay community, like Evan Wolfson of Freedom to Marry, had hoped for more.
It's not a done deal until it's done, and we're going to keep making the case that every day matters, and couples shouldn't have to fight state by state, year by year, for the freedom to marry.
Others, however, saw the court's action as a huge victory. David Codell is constitutional litigation director for the National Center for Lesbian Rights.
I think that today is one of the greatest days in the history of lesbian and gay rights in the United States.
There are no other cases before the court this term of the magnitude of same-sex marriage, but there are important cases. Tomorrow, the court will hear a religion case that tests how much prison officials must accommodate an inmate's religious practices. The statute at issue in the case is called the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, known by the acronym, wait for it, RLUIPA. It's sort of the sister statute to the one at issue in the Hobby Lobby contraception case last term. Both were enacted by Congress to strengthen religious rights. RLUIPA is aimed principally at people in prison and bars the government from imposing any substantial and unjustified burden on their religious exercise. Initially, this case had no lawyers, just an Arkansas prisoner asking for a hearing. Gregory Holt, also known as Abdul Malik, sent a handwritten 15-page brief to the court challenging Arkansas's refusal to allow him to wear a half-inch beard. The court agreed to hear the case, and now Holt is represented by the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty and Douglas Laycock, one of the country's leading authorities on religious rights. Let me dispel any notions at the outset that the prisoner here, Mr. Holt, is some sort of a sweetie jailed on a minor charge. He's not. The state of Arkansas notes in its brief that Holt describes himself as a Yemeni-trained terrorist. In 2005, he was convicted of threatening President Bush's daughters. He's currently serving a life term for breaking into the home of his ex-girlfriend and stabbing her in the neck and chest. In addition, according to the state, he was found holding a knife against a fellow inmate's throat following a religious dispute. Despite this background, Holt has the support in this case not only of groups on the ideological right and left, but also the federal government and all the leading groups that represent corrections officials throughout the United States. He describes himself as a devout Muslim who, according to the tenets of his religion, is required to wear a beard. Arkansas corrections officials, however, said no, citing the state's policy against beards in prison to prevent inmates from hiding contraband there. The state of Arkansas did not respond to inquiries for this broadcast. Its only ally in the case is the state of Alabama, which filed a brief on behalf of more than a dozen states. Andrew Brasher is the top appellate advocate for Alabama.
Prison administrators know better than judges about the unique safety problems and resource constraints in running a prison, and that's one of the reasons the Supreme Court has always deferred to their judgment when weighing prisons' religious liberty claims.
But representing Holt, Professor Laycock of the University of Virginia, counters that Congress, after holding extensive hearings, was unwilling to give unlimited deference to prison officials because of a history of what he calls egregious and unjustified intrusions on religious liberty.
Where there's clearly a security interest, and the prisons can explain it in clear terms and document it with some examples where it's happened somewhere, they're naturally going to get deference from the judges. But they didn't do any of that here.
Indeed, 43 states and the federal prison system allow beards. Briefs filed by former prison wardens and corrections officers' associations note that it's much easier to hide weapons, drugs, or other contraband in clothes, hair, or body cavities than it is to hide them in short beards. And Arkansas does allow shoulder-length hair. But Alabama's Brasher notes that prison systems are not all the same.
I think this kind of argument that essentially everyone else does it, so you have to as well, undermines the notion of deference to state administrators.
Professor Laycock counters that the Arkansas corrections officials who testified in Holt's case demonstrated not expertise, but ignorance.
There were 43 other prison systems that would allow what they prohibited. The accreditation standards encouraged what they prohibited, and they had no knowledge of any of that. So they really couldn't testify as experts.
The bottom line, Laycock says, is that if the federal statute aimed at protecting religious rights in prison does not cover short beards worn for religious purposes, it likely covers nothing. The court hears arguments in the case tomorrow, with a decision to come by the end of the term. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.